It's Thursday, July 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the world closely watches U.S. financial markets, but for several hours, there wasn't anything to watch on the New York Stock Exchange. We'll explain.
Anytime there is conversations going on and even negotiations, it's a good sign.
U.S. Senator John McCain speaks with VOA about the Afghan-Taliban talks. Iran nuclear negotiations have yet to produce a deal. Country music artists tie the knot. It's all on today's International Edition. The New York Stock Exchange halted all trading midway through its Wednesday session. Exchange officials said a technical issue forced the suspension of trading. Before trading was stopped at 11:30 a.m. local time in New York, key U.S. indexes were down a bit more than 1%. Analysts said worries about China's slowing economic growth and stock market troubles worried some investors. Officials said other financial exchanges in New York and elsewhere in the United States continued trading normally. In Europe, where talks continued on Greece's debt problems, markets traded higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, though, finished down 1.47%, shedding 261 points to end at 17,515. The S&P 500 had similar losses to close at 20,046, and the Nasdaq Composite dropped 1.75% to settle at 49,09. Following all things economic is senior VOA correspondent Jim Randall. Jim, what happened with the New York Stock Exchange Wednesday?
Well, what we know is not a lot. Apparently, it was a computer glitch, and apparently they've worked out whatever it was and fixed it, and trading has resumed. Trading was never stopped entirely because many of these issues are traded on other exchanges, so things kept perking along and to a large degree. But it was kind of a shock, and it was pretty unusual. I mean, glitches happen, but they haven't happened that often in to such a large and important financial institution.
And a bit of a surprise, given the confluence of events around the world. You have China's stock market having some severe problems right now. Greece is having its debt issues. And United Airlines had briefly all of its flights grounded because of technical issues.
Well, United traced it down to a faulty router, which I'm not a computer bunny, but as far as I can tell, it broadcasts the signal to other computers and all of that. Anyway, that went haywire. It's been fixed, replaced, or whatever, and so they're back in business. The official line we get is that these issues and problems with the Wall Street Journal website were not related and were not due to an attack, were not due to, as the White House put it, something nefarious, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase.
Yes. It's certainly a serious situation in China right now with about a 31% decline in the stock market over the past 3 weeks. The Chinese government has tried to impose some measures to curb this slide. How do you see this market at this point?
I think China matters a lot because it's been an engine of growth for the entire planet. I mean, things like Australian iron ore exports are, as China's growth slows down, Australian exports slow down. Exports of everything else to China from everywhere else to this vast market are slowing down. And, of course, that has a ripple effect through other economies. That's one issue. And the other is not so much an economic problem, but the turbulence on the stock market worries investors. The thing they hate more than most anything else is uncertainty. They can bet on stocks going up. They can bet on stocks going down. They've figured that out. What they haven't figured out is how to figure out how to cope with uncertainty. And this dramatic swinging back and forth raises uncertainty.
A real psychological type of situation.
Sure. I mean, there's real economics going on there.
Right.
I mean, that's very complicated. But perhaps it was, clearly a lot of people describe it as a bubble that has burst. And stocks, by that definition, would have been overvalued. And now they're falling down to where their economic fundamentals, the amount of profit they make and their prospects, are they likely to be, a leader in their field and sell a lot of stuff and so forth. Those fundamentals support a lower price. And so it's headed for that lower price. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if it falls below where the fundamentals should put it.
Well, sure, because then a lot of investors realize, hey, we got some bargains out there, and start buying.
Yeah, buying puts upward pressure on prices, and that raises prices, and you get a little more equilibrium.
Our equilibrium is always steady when Jim Randall is with us in the studio. Jim, thank you for stopping by.
Oh, happy to be here.
Technical issues are not preventing us from finding out what's trending on the web. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to tell us more about the glitch on the New York Stock Exchange. Welcome, G.
Hi, Jim. As our Jim Randall just said in the Q&A, it's been an action-packed day on Wall Street. But actually, it might be more accurate to say there haven't been enough activities on Wall Street. That's because the New York Stock Exchange, or NYSE, halted trading in all securities for more than 3.5 hours. Authorities say it was due to computer malfunction. And as Jim mentioned, stocks continue to trade on other venues like the NASDAQ. Today's halt comes at a very inopportune time because investors are already feeling the jitters from the Chinese shares meltdown and the Greek debt crisis.
Absolutely correct. So what are people saying about today's incident on social media?
Well, a wide range of things, such as the cause of the computer glitch and its effect on different stocks. Here's one from the Daily Beast senior congressional correspondent, Tim Mack. He tweeted, FBI Director James Comey says the Wall Street Journal website crashed due to overload from readers seeking information from hashtag NYSE technical problems. That's been retweeted more than 100 times during the last 3 hours. One user replied, this is my favorite example of irony.
Well, the FBI is always amazing in getting their information and knowing the reason behind the heavy traffic on Wall Street Journal's website. Gee, you said some people are also talking about the impact on share prices.
Mm-hmm. Especially on the type of the stocks. The Bloomberg Business's Twitter handle shared an article titled, Cybersecurity Stocks Surged on the Back of the Big NYSE Trading Halt. That's been retweeted nearly 250 times. The article is by its IPO reporter Leslie Picker at Leslie Picker, her first and last name. The article says cybersecurity shares such as Palo Alto Networks and AVG have moved up in today's trade. To put that into perspective, as you mentioned earlier, both the Dow and NASDAQ closed lower. And before I go, I just wanted to mention that hashtag NYSE was used nearly 53,000 times in the last 24 hours. Jim?
Thank you very much, G. Our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. And you can follow her on Twitter. Guess what? It's at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Listening to VOA's International Edition. A second target date for six world powers in Iran to reach a comprehensive nuclear agreement Tuesday came and went, with the United States now saying it is taking steps to ensure a joint plan of action with Tehran that freezes or rolls back part of its nuclear program remains in place through Friday. One unnamed diplomat is quoted as saying that this will be the final extension, insisting that the talks are not an open-ended process. RAND Corporation senior political scientist Rick Brennan told VOA's Victor Beatty that Iran is less interested in reaching an agreement than are the powers it's negotiating with.
I think all of this kind of suggests what many people have suspected for a long time, that the Iranians are using the negotiation process as a means to delay and ultimately try to move the ball down the court far enough that they'll be able to continue with the program that many people suspect they have. We realize they have a very sophisticated ballistic missile program. Their rocket technology is the best in the region. And with their apparent continuation of trying to resist overtures of the international community to inspect sites on military facilities, again, it suggests that in the long term what they're trying to do is to surreptitiously develop a nuclear weapon with or without the type of agreement that we put in place.
There seems to be a difference of opinion on exactly how quickly these talks should be wrapped up. The West seems to want to have it wrapped up certainly by midnight Thursday or Friday at the latest. 48 hours is what one suggested is all that they're going to give it. The Iranians say no deadline is sacrosanct for us. Why the difference?
I think the difference is because the West wants an agreement that has teeth in it that can actually prevent Iran from achieving the weapon. Iran, on the other hand, is using the negotiation process as a way to buy time. This has been a standard method that the Iranians have used in a whole range of activities. They engage in dialogue, and while they're engaged in the dialogue, they continue to pursue the type of actions that the dialogue is designed to prevent. And so by extending the talks, just gives the Iranians that much more time to move towards their ultimate goal, which, as I said before, I think is the development of a nuclear weapon.
The Associated Press quotes Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov as saying that fewer than 10 major differences are still to be ironed out, including access to Iranian sites for international monitors. 10 major differences, that seems like an awful lot of territory to cover in 48 hours.
10 major differences is enormous. I mean, we aren't talking about little things, one of which is the access to military sites for observation and monitoring what's taking place. But there are other ones that are related to the sanctions regime. How do you do this snapback, and will the Iranians agree to it? The other one is whether or not the sanctions will be removed immediately. It's something the United States has been saying they were unwilling to do. But the Iranians are saying it's the only way we'll come to an agreement. So these are huge differences that are still on the plate, and it's hard for me to see how in 2 days you can resolve these differences in a manner that satisfies the stated positions of the parties that are at the table today.
Is this a game of chicken?
I think it is a game of chicken, and I think that the Iranians are going to continue to push in this direction and wait and see what the international community does. I think in many respects, the United States and the international community are more interested in getting a deal than the Iranians are interested in making the deal. They're using this desire by the international community to come to an agreement to their advantage in the negotiating process.
Rick Brennan also sees the likelihood of an agreement by midnight Thursday as less than 50-50. He says Iran is looking at the talks as part of a process to acquire nuclear weapons, even if it takes up to a decade to achieve. This is VOA's International Edition. Pakistan says the first official face-to-face discussions between Afghan government officials and the Taliban have made progress, with the two sides agreeing at a meeting near Islamabad to work on confidence-building measures and hold more talks after the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. VOA Afghan reporters spoke a short time ago with U.S. Senator John McCain about the talks. Here are brief excerpts from that interview with the Arizona Republican and chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Anytime there is conversations going on and even negotiations, it's a good sign. There are several questions. Does this group was negotiating for the Taliban? Do they represent all of the Taliban or just part of it? What is the goal of the talks as articulated by the two sides? But we hope that these talks will succeed. We think it's very important, and perhaps, and not only perhaps, the Taliban are growing weary. I also think that the Pakistanis can play a significant role, and one significant role they can play is to cut off and stop supporting the Haqqani network, which continues to orchestrate attacks in Afghanistan, unacceptably.
On your recent trip to Afghanistan, you met with President Ghani and has staked his presidency over peace talks with Taliban, and controversially has engaged Pakistan also in these talks. Is his gambit paying off?
We hope so. We don't know, but the outreach that President Ghani made to Pakistan, I think, was the right move. I hope that it will be reciprocated. As we know, Pakistani domestic politics are very, very complex. But one can hope that the Pakistanis will see it in their interest to urge the Taliban to come to some agreement. Look, I'm not optimistic about the outcome, but I do think that it's important to make these efforts to resolve this conflict. But I'd also point out, if the Taliban believe the United States is going to be almost out, almost completely, by 2017, that removes a great deal of the motivation for them to reach a peaceful agreement, because they're going to think that they can succeed.
U.S. Senator John McCain and one-time presidential candidate speaking with VOA Afghan reporters today outside of his office right here in Washington. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
If you're a fan of country music, Brantley Gilbert's story reads like the lyrics of a song. A man who reunited with a long-lost love, but she's married to someone else. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Nikki Strong about Gilbert's story and about another wedding involving a member of Florida Georgia Line.
Summertime in the Northern Hemisphere is the time when a lot of folks get married. Country musicians are no exception. But the story behind one relationship is almost like a country song in and of itself. Nikki Strong of VOA's Country Hits USA joins us in the studio. Nikki, Brantley Gilbert married his one-time former sweetheart.
Yes.
And this is a story.
It is saucy.
So now, they met in church when they were young.
Of course.
And they kind
first
of had
verse.
Had a little kindled. Yeah, right. We're in the first verse. Had a little romance kindled. But then she went off and married somebody else.
Yes, they broke up.
And he was dating Jenna Kramer.
Yes.
And, you know, so now...
Yes.
Tell our listeners the rest of the story, as they say.
And I think it's interesting. He was dating Jenna Kramer. They broke up. She got married, so she's married. She just recently got married, literally,
right.
In May.
Right.
Now, his current CD is supposed to be about their breakup.
Okay.
Him and Jenna, right? Especially the song I'm Gone. Okay,
right.
Fine. So while he's gone, apparently his ex-girlfriend, Amber Cochran, was married already to another gentleman.
Right.
And they were apparently supposedly happily married until Brantley Gilbert shows up on the scene again. And then all of a sudden, their marriage becomes rocky, and they file for a divorce. And she says that her husband was abusive towards her. And he said, oh, no. We're getting divorced because of your cheating ways.
Oh, no.
And go ahead.
Well, now, Brantley Gilbert has written, apparently, you were telling me, some songs that we've heard on country radio, like More Than Miles, and You Don't Know Her Like I Do.
Uh-huh.
These are about...
Amber. Yes.
Get
yes.
Out.
Those are not on his current.
No, they are not on the. No, they're on the one that has made him all that money.
Yes, exactly.
On the radio.
Well, he says that, you know, they've
they've been together off and on for a long time.
Right.
They obviously had a very strong connection.
Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And so, but what I think is funny is that she, when she got divorced from her husband, 26 days later is when she announced her engagement
wow.
to Brantley Gilbert.
Oh, my. Now, this is a song. If this were Taylor Swift, there'd have been a song written about this already. Okay, so also Florida Georgia Line's Tyler Hubbard. I know young girls' hearts are breaking all over the world now because he got married as well.
Yes, he did.
Tyler is, you know, putting his Sundays on and, you know, all that kind of he's going to be playing Flip Cup with a wife now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's married.
He is married. He's married to Haley Stummel. They got married July 1st. Now, this is romantic. That date was special to them because it was the two-year anniversary of their first kiss.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
My goodness.
That sounds like a country lyric, don't
you think? That does sound like a country lyric. Of course, now, here's a little something. Mr. and Mrs. Hubbard are headed to the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Isn't that nice?
For their honeymoon.
They are. Oh, wait, don't forget. Her golden retriever, Harley, wore a bow tie. He was the ring bearer.
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you what, we welcome your comments, your questions, your tweets. You can hit Nikki up at VOA_music.
Yes.
And you can also listen to her on Country Hits USA on VOAnews.com.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us, and likely you already have, at our website, voanews.com. If you'd like more, we have more. Try Facebook, VOA Asia. And you can follow us on Twitter, VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku, and we thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The use of new technologies is a key tool to promote human rights. Though authoritarian governments may seek to control the flow of information online, human rights activists, journalists, and everyday citizens can use technology to disseminate information, to expose corruption and other misdeeds and abuses, and to stay in contact with like-minded individuals. Last year, 41 countries passed or proposed laws or regulations to punish or restrict speech online. More and more governments increasingly blocked access to websites they deemed undesirable and criminalized online speech. In Tajikistan, for example, the government intermittently blocked access to social media sites, including Facebook and YouTube. The Turkish government briefly blocked YouTube and Twitter in the lead-up to local elections. In China, the government continues to block access to websites deemed controversial, such as those discussing Taiwan or the Dalai Lama or even the New York Times. And in December, the Chinese government blocked large numbers of users of Gmail, the world's largest email service provider. Other governments passed new laws to go after activists who use the Internet to express themselves. Many who were arrested were sentenced to long prison terms, fines, corporal punishment, and even banishment. In Vietnam, authorities continue to harass, intimidate, arrest, and convict bloggers who express views critical of the government online. But even as governments attempt to control expression and access to information online, human rights activists use new technologies such as satellite imagery, video, and crowdsourcing technologies to gather and disseminate information and to document human rights abuses in areas where security and accessibility are a problem. Today, technology can be used to provide accurate information regarding protests, destruction, and violence in countries around the world. Technology can help increase transparency and fight corruption. So even as authoritarian governments become more aggressive in cracking down on freedom of expression, both online and offline, people in every country become more and more connected and better informed. Banning websites and blocking content are misguided attempts to impose order. Instead, governments must respect fundamental freedoms and promote an open global internet.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.